920 The Game, KBAD Las Vegas.
Power Play. Here's your host, C. Williams.
Jumping at you, 4 o'clock, standing tall, feeling good here on a Monday, starting the week, getting ready. Plenty to get to on this one. Wow, what a good weekend. College football, the matchups weren't that keen, but you had some pretty good ball games. Upsets in the NFL, some defensive struggles. Boy, I had 3 lockdown games. All of them were good except the one in the black and blue division. That was a... you talk about drying paint with that Bears Vikings. Yeah, how did the Vikings score 28 points on Atlanta is what I'm still scratching my head trying to find out the answer to, because they have no offense. At least they certainly didn't against the Bears defense. Now, the Bears defense I know is number 2, but still, their play calling, everything about that game was awesome. J-Dog's in the house. What's up, brother?
I am panicking and trying to get your show set up, Seat.
Well, you've been busy. You're working all week all over the place, and you got time because we've got some things we'll start with. I'll start things with the fight, okay? And then I want to ask you about the Rebels, because you follow the Rebel football program a lot closer than I do. I track it.
You are a lucky man. Jeez. I wish I didn't have to
follow. You actually have to follow it. It's unfortunate, and we'll get to that in a moment, but the fight was incredible. And I had the wrong guy, but I did it only because I got plus 575 back from Sean Porter. And did he bring it? I mean, Errol Spence Jr., and I said this, I said he's the better fighter. He reminds me in a way, but not as aggressive as Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And that's a hell of a compliment. Marvin Hagler, he just sized you up and walked right through you. A lot of people didn't know this about the Marvelous one. He was a natural right-hander who fought lefty. You didn't know this about Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya is a natural lefty that fights righty. Some guys, they're more comfortable in that opposite stance than what they normally are as far as what they would hand right with or throw with, things of that nature. But this fight, I didn't see it live. I watched the highlights of it yesterday, and I watched it again before the show. And I'll give Sean Porter credit. He basically brought it, and he brought it from time on. First round, he almost knocked Errol Spence down. Spence scored a knockdown in the 11th round on a counter left hook right on the jaw. And they're showing this thing in slow motion, and you could see the teeth of Porter just almost come out of his mouth. And he never really hit the ground. His gloves hit the ground. And he got hit, so that's how much of a rock he is. He would not go down. I wouldn't want to have to fight either one of these guys, period, for any reason at all, or have a fighter of mine fight one of these two guys. Matter of fact, if I'm one of these two guys, I wouldn't want to fight each other again. Sean Porter probably would like that. If you're Errol Spence, when you get a win over somebody that's a bulldog and won't go away, you don't fight him again. He won by split decision. The fight really perhaps was more a unanimous decision, but in respect of what Porter, because he was the aggressor, and he kept coming forward the whole fight, he lost his WBC title. So Errol Spence retains his IBF title, collects the WC belt from Porter, and let's say it. Boxing ain't dead, buddy. That fight was sick. That was fun to watch. Spence now 26-0, and he marches on to whoever wants him next. I would not want to fight this guy. He's a southpaw, so you figure you put the mix together. You got Sean Porter, who's coming after a lefty. And the thing is, in boxing, a lot of it has to do with your feet and where your feet are angled. If you're the southpaw, you want your feet on the outside, your right foot, the lead foot on the outside of the other guy's foot. Errol Spence allowed Porter to have the position in the fight where he was aggressive and he had his front foot on the outside. The problem is he really couldn't sit down on his punches. He was just wailing. He wouldn't stop swinging. He was just throwing punches left and right, just going crazy, and he's very awkward. And that made it difficult for Spence to really get in the mix and do what he wanted, but he countered him a few times, and eventually, in a great fight, Errol Spence got the victory. Glad I watched the replay highlights of it a couple of times. Now, this one I won't watch the highlights of. That's the Rebels at Wyoming. And we talked about this on Thursday. And one thing I'm noticing, I said this about the program 2 years in a row. I haven't said it this year, but I may in a minute. But one thing I noticed about in tracking the way the scores are coming at you, after they beat Southern Utah and their next three losses in a row, with the exception of Northwestern, they were competitive in that game. But against Arkansas State and Wyoming, they were blown out by halftime. The game was over. It was 33-10 at halftime. It was similar to that when they played Arkansas State, and then they got beat 53-17. So you look at the schedule here, for one, Boise, Vandy, Fresno State, San Diego State, Colorado State. They may not get another win till they play Hawaii.
I don't know if they can compete with Hawaii. How many Pac-12 teams has Hawaii taken down this year?
That's a good point. And then San Jose State and Reno. I don't think it matters what happens unless they go on this tremendous run. They're 1-3. You update me on what you saw and the listeners out there in this ball game against Wyoming. We talked about the altitude, about 8,600 feet, and all the other things. Wyoming's a team with a redshirt freshman quarterback who is not very accurate with his passes, but he runs the football, and they ran the football.
I mean, good God. It was one of those games where, all right, so Armani Rogers didn't look good, but in the six drives that he started out, they produced, actually, I think it was four drives that before he got a little dinged up, they produced 10 points. Then they go to the other kid, and in the nine drives he went, they produced 7 points. I don't know whether it's neither quarterback can throw. I don't know. Obviously, Charles Williams being injured makes them even more one-dimensional. But if you look at the game plan that Wyoming came out with, which is our quarterback can't throw. So the very first series, Wyoming has the ball. Run,
right.
Punt. Well, what do they do in the next series? Run. Like they're not abandoning. They're not abandoning that game plan, and it looked like the Rebels just didn't have a plan A, and they were like, "Well, what about plan B?" And it's like, "Dude, plan A, and like you don't have a plan A."
Yeah, you know, here's
you
the
don't
other
know
thing.
Who your quarterback
it,
is.
It looks like one of two things: either they don't have the talent, the Rebels, or they're not prepared in the first half. I said this about the program. I may as well say it now. It's just not a very good football program.
Well, the last time they went to a bowl game, didn't all those wins get vacated? So it's sort of.
No, they went to a bowl game under John Robinson in 2000. They beat Arkansas. It was 2000 or 2002. That was the last time they went to the bowl and won a bowl game. No, they went under, what's his name, too? Chris Beard. No, not Beard. Chris. You know who I'm talking about, the coach from Montana State. They went to a bowl game under him.
I just, for some reason, remember the last time this team being, like, really good, they got all their wins vacated.
It was John Robinson. Robinson was the last time they were good. And you're thinking back in the 80s, 86, when they had Randall Cunningham
right. And Kenny Mayne and all those.
Also, coming up, 420 will get dope started. Andy Esco is going to knock out the baseball playoffs. Folk, let's get ready now for week number four. The NFL. All right, let's get you rocking the NFL. What we saw last was kind of fun. Remember last year when the Cowboys played the Saints down in Big D, they won the game 13-10. Defensive struggle. Well, they turned the pages on this one. This time they're down on Bourbon Street, and the Saints went 12-10. Look, you don't always have to have a ton of points to have an exciting, not exciting, but a very competitive game. I was locked in on this game. It was fun to watch. You didn't know who was going to win. They held the Cowboys to 257 yards on the ground, and Lutz had four field goals.
Oh no! I'm sorry. I grabbed you. I grabbed you. The defensive player.
We'll take that.
takes a snap. Saints bring five. Prescott throws this one. It's not even going to get to the end zone. It is intercepted. Marcus Williams and the New Orleans Saints take this one from the Dallas Cowboys 12-10 on a phenomenal defensive performance.
That was, and all the cuts are from the NFL. And that was the best cut to play because that's how the game ended. That was what you call the chessboard checkmate, where the last play of the game, the defensive coordinator says, okay, they're going for a Hail Mary. Let's blitz Dak. And they didn't know it was coming, and he didn't have time to scramble. He threw the ball off his back leg and got clocked. And that's how the game ended. Game over. Okay? So the Cowboys get their first loss. The Saints, they pick up another victory. Cowboys at 3-1, and so are the Saints. All right, this particular game was incredible. I didn't get to see it, but I saw highlights of it. The Buccaneers go into the Coliseum to take on the Rams, and Jameis Winston went crazy. 355 yards, 4 TDs.
Play action fake, dropping. Winston throws a deep ball downfield, got a receiver open. It is caught on the third. Oh, the 20 to the 15 to the 10. 5. Mike Evans, touchdown. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Winston goes deep and throws a beautiful rainbow pass. 67 yards in the box. Have scored 40 plus. 44-27. Winston with a bomb.
Even their announcer's excited. He's on helium.
He's not used to it.
He's bringing it. Wow. Went off. 55-40, your final score. Jared Goff with three picks in that game. He had 515 yards himself and a pair of TDs, but not enough because Jameis Winston was just serving them. They're 2-2 now on the Bucs. The Rams get their first defeat of the year. They're now at 3-1. And that's the most points in Tampa Bay history. 55 points in a regular season game. This game was fun. And I have to admit, if they could keep doing this, this was one of my NFL lockdown games. They'll be fun to watch. I'm talking about the Cleveland Browns. They go into Baltimore and take the Blackbirds apart. 40-25, your final. Baker Mayfield, 342 yards. Nick Chubb.
Mayfield under center on first down. Toss sweep near side. Here comes Chubb with a cutback. He's out to the 20, 25, 30, 35, 40. Here he goes to the 50. Here goes Chubb. He's going to go. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. Nick Chubb. He's got a hat trick. Wow. 88 yards by Chubb.
They say he was running at about 22 miles per hour. Did you see the run? Did you see?
Oh, yeah. No,
dude,
it was.
He's like a piston. It was like he had the ball in his right or left arm, and he was like just a machine. It was like a robot running on a football field, and he's just blowing people away. They couldn't even get close to him. They say he's the fastest guy in the NFL right now. I'm not going
to. We have no evidence to say otherwise.
He was flying. 40-25, the Browns get the victory. Good for them. Baker Mayfield could sleep easy for a week, and we'll see what happens coming up. Nick Chubb with that 88-yard run had three touchdowns to go at it. Mayfield had 342 yards, a TD, and a pick. 2-2, both teams in that north of the AFC. That's going to be those two teams the rest of the way because Cincinnati and the Berg aren't going to be much of a factor unless they could pull an upset. Another good game. The Chiefs
surprisingly
going.
Surprisingly good game.
Yeah, and hey, let's face it, give Matt Stafford credit. I mean, the dude, he competes. And so does this guy, Pat Mahomes. Didn't have a TD in this game. I think it's only the second or third time in his career he didn't toss for one. Second?
Yep.
Well, in the end, Williams had a couple of TDs in the game. And Breland with that 100-yard touchdown return. Take your pick.
Stafford under center. Johnson tries it. The Chiefs circle in behind him and push him back. It will give him forward motion of about a half yard. Now the Chiefs pull the ball out, but the play, has it been blown dead? Chiefs are running the other way with the football. Walt Anderson is letting Breshad Breland. They're letting Breshad Breland go all the way for 99 yards and a fumble return for a touchdown defensively. So the handoff went to Kerryon Johnson, and this is a nervous officiating crew right now because they are circling around, and here comes Walt Anderson's.
Rolling on the field, the ball was loose. It is a fumble. Return for a touchdown.
Oh, my goodness.
Kansas City.
Touchdown, Kansas City. A 99 and a half yard fumble return for a touchdown.
Okay, I stand corrected. It wasn't a kickoff return. It was a fumble return for six. 34-30, your final. The Chiefs stay unbeaten at 4-0, and the Lions go to 2-1-1. That was fun.
Oh, man, that was great.
This was, too. Jacksonville Jaguars and Fournette getting it done. Perhaps Minshew with a mustache, 213 yards. And also, was it Langston with the 33-yard reception?
Lambeau. No, wait, sorry. Lambeau was the guy who kicked
it. Lambeau was the guy who kicked the field goal to win the game at the end.
Well, I got Minshew doing some stuff.
Do whatever you want.
Got it.
Dropping his Gardner to throw. Looking, still looking. Scrambles to his right. Now he's going to run it up forward. Still stays on his feet. Still looking. Now he fires into the end zone. He wants Rock Armstead in the back of the end zone. That's going to be a touchdown. Gardner Minshew, the magic man, got it to the rookie for the score.
Uncle Rico never made a play like that. I can tell you that. Minshew mania is alive.
26-24, your final. 2-2 of the Jags. The Broncos, boy, they got beat on a field goal by Lambeau, 33 yards to win it, 26-24. They're 0-4 now, and that's their worst start since I can remember. Panthers, 16-10 over the Texans. A TD there by McCarthy.
Man hurts in, sets up as a wing on the right. McCaffrey, right up the middle, touchdown. Carolina Panthers from 3 yards out.
There you go.
I mean, that was about as exciting as the game was.
And this game about the same. The Patriots with those takeaways. Well, they have six picks, 16-10. They beat the Bills to go 4-0, and the Bills at 3-1.
Third and 10 snap to Barkley. Drops back. There's pressure. He's hit. Ball high in the air. It'll be intercepted. Jamie Collins down the left side. Forced out of bounds. But the interception was forced by Kyle Van Noy, who hit Barkley with a deflection to Collins with 1:27 to go here in the fourth.
They struggled to get that victory, man. Let's face it, Buffalo Bills.
Buffalo gave them every opportunity to get it.
Tell me about it. It's a situation where in your division, the coaches know one another. The coordinators are familiar with what the other team is doing on the table. And that's why you have these kind of games. Miami's a different story. Generally, the Patriots go down there and struggle. Not this one. Vikings and Bears. This was a sleeper, okay? But the Bears, who are headed over to play the Raiders in London, they won 16-6 to go to 3-1. Cook.
Cousins under center. Dalvin Cook, the tailback. Hand off Dalvin to the right side. He walks into the end zone. Touchdown, Vikings. Makes it 16-6. Bears with 2:58 to go in the game.
There you go.
They tried to come back. Yep. They couldn't do it.
This game. 3-1 are the Bears. 2-2 the Vikings. Bears have allowed 11 points a game. Second in the league defensively. And then there's the Raiders. The Raiders with a 31-24 victory over the Colts. Williams with a touchdown.
Third and 10 snap to Barkley. Drops back. There's pressure. He's hit. Ball high in the air. It'll be intercepted.
Oh, that's the wrong highlight.
Let it go.
My bad.
It's all good.
Sorry.
Hey, everything's wrong with the silver and black, so don't worry about it. They got the victory 31-24. They're 2-2 along with the Colts. The Colts have no business losing a game like that if they want to be serious, man. I don't care if it's the Brissett, whoever your quarterback is. The Raiders come in. I'm not going to call them dysfunctional anymore because they don't have the issues that they had there when Antonio Brown was there. But still, 31-24, you give up 31 points at home to the Raiders, a team that has shown no offense? No. Unfortunately for the Colts, that's the case. For us here in Vegas and for Oakland, that's a good thing. So there you have it as far as rocking the NFL week number four. And then again tonight, Cincinnati hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers. Andy Esco,
who you got? Who you got in that game?
I got nobody in that game. That's one game I don't think I'll have too much interest in. I'll watch it because it is the NFL. But other than that, there's really no other reason to be checking that game out unless you got action on it.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Like, who,
I got no action.
How do you even bet that game?
You could bet it, but. You're guessing. You have no idea. Right. Time now. Lighters up, baby.
And I've been saving for a special occasion.
like a quarter pounder, man. Led Zeppelin. Hey, be careful with that, man. Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for, man, that show is dope.
420 in the valley. Lighters up. Pass it. Cool. This one, this particular person probably did more than just a little dope. A 48-year-old female bus driver up in the state of Washington was drunk for roughly, I believe she drove for 10 hours. She had high school students, elementary students. ABC gives you the full report.
Release video is giving us a glimpse of what happened on a Longview school bus earlier this month. The driver resigned yesterday after being charged with DUI. We filed a public records request to get this video. It's nearly 2 hours long. Catherine Macaron spent much of the time rambling with and without students on board. Her behavior is much different during her morning route compared to the afternoon. This was her response when one of the elementary school students said his teacher thought she was crazy.
I am crazy. I'm totally crazy. I am so fun crazy. Because I love life. And most people, they're like, oh, so quiet. They don't say nothing. I'm just super happy and silly and funny. And you're like, oh my gosh, she's crazy. No, I'm not crazy. I'm like, I graduated college like 3 different times.
An elementary school student called 911 about her. We've tried to reach Macaron for comment, but haven't heard back. If you want to see more video from inside the bus.
She was so drunk. She was wiped. Listen, she ran through 3 lights. The 10-year-old said after he called 911 that he could tell she was intoxicated and he smelled alcohol on her breath.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. Like, this is one of those, like, she was better. At least she wasn't drunk on her while she was taking him to school. Like that's any sort of like excuse. This unfortunately, because I've lived in a lot of different places in these United States. This isn't that unheard of.
This is pretty crazy. I mean, I'm looking at the video and she sits. When the kids get off the bus, the video camera's still rolling, and she's talking out loud to herself for a long period, extended period. Fortunately, nobody got hurt. Not just her, the kids, but someone outside. That's a big bus. That bus hits a motorcycle, a pedestrian, or another vehicle.
That's really bad.
She's strictly a dope.
Well, I normally try to brighten your day with my dopes, but this one is one I think you need to talk about. And it's a good thing that for once we aren't talking about
Antonio,
but instead we're talking about Vontaze Burfict.
Uh-oh.
He has been suspended for the remainder of the season due to a head-to-head hit on Colts tight end Jack Doyle, you know. Andrew Luck's favorite guy, Jack Doyle, you know. So, in the play, Jack Doyle is on his knees, and there is another Raider coming up to touch him and be like, hey, you're down. But what Vontaze Burfict does is goes, ah, I know what I will do. I will launch myself as a human rocket. And in case my helmet happens to miss his head, I will also put my forearm up so that way I can make the most amount of impact into this guy on his knee's head. This would all be not that shocking, but here's the thing. Since he entered the league, now, fun fact, Vontaze Burfict's only 29. Do you know how many times he's been suspended or fined for dirty play?
How many? 10 times. 10?
This is his 11th. So that means he's had the meetings. He's sat down with the coaches. He sat down with people from the front office. He sat down from people who, you know, protect the shield. And they've all explained to him, if you keep doing this, we're going to take your money and we're going to suspend you. And he keeps going, nah, I don't get it. This is the kind of person that, like, thank God he's a football player, because I'm afraid that if he goes to jail once, he'll never not, he will be in jail forever. Because he's a recidivist. If you explain to me 10 times, what I'm doing is wrong, and I do it an 11th, don't suspend him for the season. Just kick him out of the league.
You got to ban him.
He's a dope.
And yeah, he is a dope. And I know this is part of it, but no pay. So he's done. He suspended rest of the year with no play. Here's the thing about him. He was a great collegiate player at Arizona State University. He was an All-American. He was Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year 2 years in a row, his sophomore and freshman year. And then he was an All-American defensive linebacker in collegiate play. That tells you right there how good he was and how much potential he had. He's leaving the field yesterday, and he's laughing and blowing kisses to the crowd. He gone.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to ask you real quick, though. I mean, you get him for the next 12 games next year, right? I mean, you already paid him. He's on a one-year contract. You're the Raiders. You try to get him for another 4 games before he gets suspended next year?
No, you get him out of there. He gone. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
All right, this right here, it's a pretty good dope. Saturday night in Auburn Hills, Michigan, Highway 175. Cops begin to receive calls about 11 o'clock at night. Okay. Now, cars are pulling off the road right before they could get off on that intersection, on that exit ramp, because on this billboard, they're showing live porn. Not just a photo of porn. There's active porn being shown on a billboard on I-75 at 11 o'clock at night in Auburn Hills, Michigan. So people are calling 911, calling the police. So the popo man comes out and they start looking at it themselves. Now, I'm not saying they were getting into it or anything like that. However, they actually had to contact the billboard operator in Canada based Triple Property to shut down the screen. This went on for 10 to 15 minutes of, I don't know how good the porn was, but free porn.
God, no, that's the ultimate. Well, I wouldn't have such a problem with it if it was better quality.
Maybe some quality porn, damn it. How do you always bring up porn on our show? Come on.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
You can't let that story go, though,
I know.
Right?
It's supposed to be a kid's show with a segment called Dope.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, though, that right there, to me, how they got that up there, if this is a site, the site promoting what they have, you know, they put their quality stuff up on that billboard. That's pretty dope. That's pretty dope. Yep.
All right. I got one last one because we got a little bit of time before we got to go to break. California. The governor signed the law. Gavin Newsom, he signed the law. California will become the first state to allow college athletes to profit from endorsements.
This is awesome.
Yeah. This is great.
That's very dope.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if you're a kid in Texas, let's say you're a 3-star, maybe a 4-star kid, you know, and you know, in 2023, it's going to kick into effect. You're a kid, you're in high school, and you're being recruited. Now, all of a sudden, Cal Berkeley and Bakersfield and some other schools in California are recruiting you, too. Better schools, bigger schools starting to come along. Guess what? You think about it because you could get paid.
Yeah, like
you get paid. Yep. All right. So there you have it. Lighters down, baby. I like that.
Gonna get logical around the corner.
Logical approach. Andy Esco on deck across the street here on Power Play.
Symmetry Medical Spa wants you to laugh, love, and live again. How, you ask? Symmetry Medical Spa is offering FemTouch. FemTouch is a medical, non-invasive urinary incontinence procedure that will control bladder leakage and tighten the vaginal wall. It only takes 2 to 3 treatments and only 5 minutes of your time in our office. Symmetry Medical Spa always offers free consultations, and for a limited time, you can receive $1,000 off. Easy financing. Lands are available. Call now, 702-749-5555. And ask about their free Botox special. Se habla español.
Hi, I'm attorney Paul Pata. If you've been injured in an accident, my team at Paul Pata Law can help. Remember, it's not about the injury.
It's about the recovery.
Paul
PaulPattaLaw.com. Call 702-602-7878.
Gents, Seat Williams here. It's time to reload. Move past all the supposed male enhancers, free testosterone products, and get her done. The answer? Trim Care. The hormone replacement pellet therapy will once again make you the boss in the box. Take it from me, got her done. Energy levels up. Emotions are balanced. Motor running like a freight train. And it restores your mental sharpness. For more than half a year, your testosterone levels will be above or at the male standard. And you'll regain your throne as boss in the box. Contact Trim Care now at 702-878-8888. Tell them Seat sent you and receive a 10% discount. Ladies, get it for your man and you'll be rewarded. 702-878-8888. That's trimcare.com.
PropSwap is America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Go online, PropSwap.com, today and discover how much your bet is worth and to find great deals on bets other people want to sell. That's PropSwap.com.
Symmetry Medical Spa wants you to have the big, luscious lips you have always dreamed about. In just 20 minutes, you can have the lips you always desired, and for a limited time, when you buy one filler, you get Botox for free. Yes, that's right. No gimmicks, no fine print. Buy one filler and get free Botox. Get the lips to match your beautiful body and watch the heads turn. Call now, 702-749-7575 to schedule your appointment or visit SymmetryMedicalSpa.com. Symmetry Medical Spa. 749-7575. Te habla español.
Back on the main streets of Vegas, 431, as we move along here on a Friday, crossing the street, we go into our good friend with the logical approach, Andy Esco. Andy, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing fine, Seat. Hope you are as well.
Thank you. Hey, before we get to the baseball, want to talk a bit about the game tonight in the NFL. And then the first game of Week 5, which is a pretty good matchup up in Seattle with the Rams and Seattle. We'll start you with tonight's game, and then we'll talk some baseball after that. The Bengals and the Steelers. The Steelers have always been a team that you reckon by this time of year, maybe they're 2-1 or 3-0. Cincinnati may have a win, but these two teams combined to be 0-6 coming into tonight's play. And I'm kind of surprised where the line is on this.
Yeah, I would have thought this line would have been right around 3 because there's really been little to differentiate between the two teams thus far this season. In fact, you could almost argue that Cincinnati has been the more competitive of the two teams, although Pittsburgh has faced, I think, probably the best of the 9 teams that these two have played, and that's having played at New England. Both teams played Seattle and San Francisco. Pittsburgh performed better against San Francisco than did Cincinnati, but Cincinnati arguably played better against Seattle than did Pittsburgh. Of course, that was the game Pittsburgh-Seattle where Roethlisberger got injured, but they were not playing well at the time that he did get injured. So I'm a little bit surprised that this line is 3.5 as opposed to perhaps just a solid 3, which would almost indicate that under the current rosters that these teams are pretty much pick 'em on a neutral field. If you use the standard 3 points for home field advantage, you'd bring it down to pick 'em if the line were 3. So maybe it's a little bit of a sign that the books may be thinking that Pittsburgh may be the right side here, because you'd have to believe that the sharps are going to be taking the 3.5 points with Cincinnati, and the public has yet to be able to put enough up on Pittsburgh to raise the line to 4. So it's sort of a little bit of a tug and war. It's not a very pretty game. Obviously, the loser of this game drops to 0-4. The winner of this game, quote unquote, improves to 1-3, but still they face a tall task with both Baltimore, and now you got to throw Cleveland in the discussion, playing the best overall football in the division.
And it's funny you say that. That's Andy Esco, logical approach here on the show, Power Play, because Cincinnati usually would be competitive. The Steelers would always be right on top with the Ravens. The Browns would be at the bottom. Now the bottom feeders have moved up. The Ravens, actually, we didn't expect what we saw, at least in the first couple of games, from them and Jackson, the way they put points on the board, kind of cooled them off this week. However, it's kind of I don't know what to say about this division. It's a two-team race, it seems like right now, but in the end, we'll find out if Cleveland can hang on and race with the Ravens down the stretch and if one of these two teams can turn it around.
Well, yeah, it's a long season. The teams still have 12 games to go, and really, I believe the only division game that we've seen played so far was yesterday with Baltimore losing at home to Cleveland. That's a big win for Cleveland, a huge loss for Baltimore, because anytime you can win a road divisional game, that's positive. Anytime you lose a home divisional game, that's a negative. Obviously, Baltimore has another game at Cleveland late in the season, by which time Cleveland, if everybody stays healthy, will may be playing as the most talented team in the division. And I think most people, if you take a look at the roster, you'd say Cleveland has the most talent. It's the raw talent. It has to gel. Certainly, fans of the Browns and the Browns themselves have to be very pleased with the effort they put in yesterday. That was really a total domination, basically wire to wire, against a very good Baltimore team, but a Baltimore team that, aside from the previous game that they lost, which was last week at Kansas City, where they got a backdoor cover, they really hadn't beaten anybody in beating Miami to open the season, and then the following week sort of sleepwalking past the Arizona Cardinals, which enabled Arizona to have a chance to do some damage late in that game. So I think right now you still have to look at Baltimore and Cleveland, and I'll throw Pittsburgh in there, but if Pittsburgh loses tonight, you know, there's another home loss within the division by a member of the division. That would be Pittsburgh tonight losing at home to Cincinnati. So one thing appears clear: it's not the most difficult division in football, as some people have thought it might be.
Andy, let's go to this coming Thursday, getting off into week number 5. The Rams in Seattle, two good weeks in a row where we had some keen matchups for Thursday night football in the NFL. The Rams at Seattle. Seattle a slight favorite in this one. And both teams coming off of tough games.
Yeah, actually, when this line came out at the Westgate, I guess it was last Tuesday, they put out those 10-day advance lines. The Rams were 1.5-point road favorites. They were actually bet up to a 2.5-point road favorite. Then, of course, the Rams got humiliated yesterday by the Tampa Bay Bucks, and Seattle had their issues yesterday as well. The line came out with the game Pick'em, and we've seen money come in initially on the Rams, actually, and then more recently over the last 24 hours come in on Seattle. Seattle, a 1.5-point home favorite in this game, and of course Seattle will be looking to avoid a second home divisional loss, having lost a week ago at home to New Orleans. So this would be a second home divisional loss. So the game's a little bit more critical to Seattle. At the same time, you would expect the Rams to bounce back after what was absolutely a horrible effort, pretty much on both sides of the football yesterday, in losing at home to Tampa Bay. So it's a tough game to handicap from that standpoint. All things being equal, however, when I look at the talent on the teams, I have to like Russell Wilson over Jared Goff. The Rams defense, which had been a strength, did not look anything like a strength yesterday against Tampa Bay. Those, I think, are problems that can be corrected. Unfortunately, when you're going up against someone like Russell Wilson, it's going to be a lot more difficult to put the pressure on him that you would be able to put on a less mobile, less agile quarterback. So right now, and I haven't decided what I'm doing on that game, right now I am looking at Seattle, notwithstanding the fact that I normally like to go on teams that put in as poor a performance as the Rams did yesterday.
He's Andy Esco, Logical Approach here on the show Power Play, as we talk a little Thursday night football. Now let's go to the yard. Dodgers in the National League with the overall best record, being the number one seed, and they await tomorrow's winner in that play-in game between Milwaukee and Washington. It looks like Brandon Woodruff and Max Scherzer is going to square up in this one. Give us the numbers and all the other details you have here, Andy.
Yeah, right now I'm looking at mostly around town, the Washington Nationals with Scherzer are anywhere from about $1.74, $1.75 to $1.80 favorites, with the take back about plus 164. I'm seeing 160 on the low part, 165 on the high end on Milwaukee. Scherzer, of course, has the overall edge as far as the matchup head-to-head with Woodruff of Milwaukee in terms of experience, especially in the postseason. Neither pitcher was pitching especially well down the stretch. Woodruff missed a great deal of time after pitching well early in the year. Scherzer has also had some time on the DL this year, but he's pitched now for, about the last month or so since he returned. Of course, the big loss here is Christian Yelich, who had a real good shot at making it back-to-back with MVPs after winning it last year, but he's been out for basically the past month. Yet at the same time, Milwaukee had, I think, the best record in baseball, certainly up through this past weekend when they lost a couple of games in Colorado. Washington has been pretty steady. This team was 12 games, I believe, or so below 500 back a little bit after Memorial Day, sometime in early June when they caught fire, and they ended up 93-69, a four-game edge over Milwaukee. That's why they're hosting this game. Milwaukee has the edge in the bullpen. At the same time, their bullpen may require to go deeper into the game than will Washington, because Scherzer's one of the few pitchers in baseball this year, few starting pitchers, actually averaging better than six innings per start. So it'll be important for Washington to get out to the lead and then call upon the bullpen to protect the lead, whether it's a one-run lead or a greater margin. And the game may offer, from that standpoint, some opportunities for in-game wagering. Now that we have that option with basically every half inning, and that's where it pays, of course, to have any one of a number of the mobile apps that are available here throughout Nevada from the various sports books. So you can get involved if you don't have an opinion at the start of the game. The total in the game is 7.5 with the overpriced at minus 120. I tend in games like this, especially when supposedly your top pitchers are going, and that would be the case with Scherzer, and I guess Milwaukee must be considering Woodruff their best starting pitcher, that these games tend to be deliberately managed. Both teams want to get off to an early lead. Both teams want to make sure that they don't allow any big innings. So I might look to play under the first five innings in this game, because you can expect, barring something unusual in so far as big innings coming up early, one of the starters getting in trouble, I'm going to look to play under the four in the first five innings. Might back that up with the play on the under 7.5 for the game, but also be prepared to take advantage of in-game opportunities.
I like everything there. Serves well for this matchup. And let's face it, the Nationals last year was supposed to be their year. Bryce Harper goes free agent. He's gone to Philly now, and here they are back in the playoffs. On the other hand, Milwaukee was done and buried. The Cubs all of a sudden went to sleep. Here they won, what was it, something like 18 of their last 21-22 games to get themselves in this situation. So you can't really lose. The fan bases are great in both cities. It's good to have baseball back in Washington, and we know the history of the Brewers and Milwaukee, and that's their heart and soul back there is baseball, kind of like the Cardinals. So, hey, the Dodgers will get one of the two, and likely they'll move on, and we'll see if the Dodgers can get something done more than the last two seasons where they were taken out by the Red Sox and Astros. Speaking of which, the Astros with the overall best record sit and wait for Wednesday's winner, Tampa and Oakland. And this right here is going to be interesting because we know how deep that bullpen is for the Rays, and they've got some good starters as well. On the other hand, Oakland, they kind of caught fire in the last 6 weeks of the season to put themselves in this playoff situation.
Yeah, in fact, I forget the exact numbers, but I believe that I heard or read somewhere that Oakland has the best record in baseball going back to like the middle of June, something like that. So we're talking like 90 games or something along those lines that they've had the best record in baseball. They haven't named a starting pitcher yet. I'm kind of thinking they might go with Sean Manaea, the lefty who had the breakout season last year, missed much of this season with injury. He's come back in the month of September. He's actually made five starts. And in each of those starts, he's given up two runs or less. In fact, in four of the five starts, he's given up one run or no runs. He's gone seven innings, five and two-thirds innings, five innings, six innings, and six innings. So he's done extremely well as far as limiting the opposition. In fact, in those five starts, he's struck out a total of 30 batters, walked only 7. So that's a pretty nice display of power and control, in addition to allowing just 16 hits in those 29 and two-thirds innings that he's pitched. So he seems to have come up nicely. They took their time with him. And I would think, although I haven't heard anything, that he would be the starter because, you know, unlike a best-of-5 or a best-of-7 series where you can afford a loss in the opening game, you can't do that in the wild card game. So they've got to put all their best opportunities up against Tampa, who will be tough. Charlie Morton's had a very fine year coming over from Houston. Haven't really seen a number on this game. I've seen a couple of numbers, but... they have, they're still up there. I'm showing actually one place in town, one place offshore, showing at about the 135 to 40 range for Oakland. One place has a total of 7.5, the other has a total of 8. And that line seems pretty reasonable, even if you just have Morton and you have the undersided for Oakland, though I do expect Manaea, barring some unusual issue. He last pitched on the 26th, which, if I recall correctly, was Thursday, so he would have had Friday, Saturday, Thursday. So he would have had 4 days off, and maybe they're not going to ask him to go the full 6 innings, but I think he gives them their best chance based upon what we've seen out of him in his 5 September starts.
Andy Esco of Logical Approach here on the show, Power Play. Andy, let me ask you this. Friars, who threw the no-hitter for Oakland earlier in the year, they pitched him over the weekend in a they were already set for the playoffs. You know you're going to be playing in the playoffs. I guess you want a home field advantage. Why not take a starter like that and maybe throw him 1 or 2 innings or whatever the case may be, or rest him so you could have him for a game like this instead of bringing someone else in?
Well, that's quite possible they may do something like that. Like I say, Manaea pitched 6 innings on Thursday. Then Fires pitched on Friday. He pitched 5 innings. On Saturday, they went with Anderson, who had a fine second half of the season. So Anderson might have pitched a little bit too recently on Saturday, but certainly Fires, Manaea could be in line for a start, and maybe only ask him to go 3-4 innings at most. You know, maybe put him on a pitch count of say 50 to 60 pitchers, if that, and try and just cobble their way through the wild card game. Of course, the problem if you do that is when you get to that first wild card game, and in the American League, it would be on Friday, then you might not have either of these pitchers available for more than just a few innings if you give them Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off. So not quite sure. Again, we'll probably find out tomorrow morning. I'm sorry, they wouldn't have Tuesday off because they're playing tomorrow night, but they'd have Wednesday and Thursday off, which would be almost a similar situation to just having a couple of days of the weekend off. But I can certainly understand. We've seen more and more teams go to the opener route where you are asking a pitcher just to go 2-3 innings. Normally you then turn it over to someone who you would expect to be able to go 5 or 6, as opposed to what we were just talking about, where you would have someone go 3 innings, come in the next guy for another 3 innings, and sort of like that. So not quite sure what to read into that, but I know that both Tampa Bay and Oakland can't really be thinking ahead to Friday. They've got to be thinking ahead to the next inning, inning by inning tomorrow night.
Absolutely. Both those games in Milwaukee, Washington, also Tampa and Oakland, about 5:05, somewhere around there, they'll have the first pitch. Then on Thursday, Cardinals, Atlanta, Yankees, Minnesota going Friday. I'll let you start with the Cardinals and the Braves.
Yeah, I haven't seen any prices on these yet, but to be honest, I haven't really looked all that hard other than at a couple of places that you normally have them up, and I haven't seen them yet. But St. Louis, Atlanta, very interesting series because both teams have been very similar. Neither has outstanding starting pitching, although Jack Flaherty for St. Louis, and I'm sure we've heard all about that over the last 24 to 48 hours, especially since he pitched yesterday, has had a sensational second half of the season, putting up some amazing numbers. I want to say something like a 0.65 whip going back well over a dozen starts. Atlanta's had Mike Soroka there. Their young pitchers had a very solid, consistent season. St. Louis has had some decent performances from some of their backups. The old veteran Adam Wainwright, notwithstanding keeping loose yesterday, gave up 4 home runs, but St. Louis had already clinched the home field. Well, they've clinched the Central Division by yesterday going into that game. Atlanta with Mike Fultonevich, Dallas Keuchel, mentioned Soroka, Julio Torrens had his moments. They've had some solid starting pitching. I think Atlanta probably has the better overall lineup, so I want to see what the price is. Might take a shot with St. Louis. However, I do give the winner of this series a realistic shot at getting by the winner of the series between the Dodgers against either Milwaukee or Washington. I'm expecting Washington to defeat Milwaukee. I think it would make for a very interesting and compelling National League divisional series. Of course, we saw Milwaukee and the Dodgers play for the National League pennant last year, so that would be a repeat of a playoff series at least. But with Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin, you've got three quality pitchers for the Washington Nationals. The issue with Milwaukee is they don't really have a great starting rotation. They do have a very solid bullpen, but that might not come into play until the middle innings if the starting pitching doesn't hold up. So I would look for either St. Louis or Atlanta because they've got understated decent starting pitching to give the Dodgers a real run for their money in the National League Championship Series. I might make Washington a bit of a favorite over either St. Louis or Atlanta. However, St. Louis or Atlanta, by being a division winner, would have the home field advantage over the Nationals.
And then the Minnesota Twins and the New York Yankees. We're talking about hammer baseball here. I don't see a total. Give us the info you have on this.
Yeah, I don't have anything on this one either. I haven't seen either team list their starting pitchers for Game 1, which will be on Friday. And, of course, with all the time off between now and Friday, they can pretty much set up their rotations any way they want. The Yankees may have a little bit of an edge as far as experience goes. They've had great success over Minnesota over the years, both regular season and in the postseason. Minnesota, I feel, is the most vulnerable of the American League teams simply because of the division they played in. They played in the division that had, you know, the White Sox, the Tigers, and the Royals, and I forget the exact number, but they finished a combined 100 and something games under 500, and Minnesota played something along the neighborhood of almost a third of their season against those teams, you know, 54, 56 games, something like that. So they feasted on the teams they had a feast on. They did not fare well against teams that finished the season with winning records. They do have that great power, and that could be an advantage for them against the Yankees, whose weakness is really in the starting rotation. Severino came back. He didn't pitch well the other day, but he did pitch well in his first two starts. I think they probably just wanted to give him a little bit work over the weekend. So he's got his teammate Tanaka has had some good big game experience, but really beyond that, we don't know about James Paxton being in the postseason for the first time, coming over from Seattle in the offseason. This might be a series where I might take a look at Minnesota in the first five innings before they have to deal with the Yankees bullpen, because I think once you get into innings 6, 7, 8, and 9 and the Yankee bullpen takes over, I think that's when the Yankees have the decided edge, both in terms of quality and experience. So maybe my approach would be, rather than play Minnesota for the full game, play them for the first five innings. Then perhaps if the Yankees are down in the middle innings, maybe the Yankees, if priced reasonably enough, might be a play for in-game. Say if they're down, let's say, by two runs heading to the bottom of the sixth.
Andy, let the folk know where they can find you.
Well, I'll be writing about these games in my Gaming Today article. That'll be out on Wednesday, by which time the results of Tuesday night's game will be known. I won't know it because the column is going to be submitted prior to the game tomorrow, but at least we'll have a little bit of a head start, so I'll be doing some theoretical possibilities going forward. And my column on the NFL, we'll take a look at a half dozen NFL games, some thoughts on what we've seen so far in the first quarter of the season, which, incredibly enough, comes to an end tonight. We'll have already been a quarter of the way through the regular season.
Always a pleasure, Andy. Take care.
You too, Seed. Have a great week.
You too. Chinsuck Logarts apply. See you on the radio. Peace, power up, power out.
Go with reliable, reliablebanner.com. Cooler temps mean spending more time outdoors, kids' soccer, weddings, Halloween parties. So make your message stand out with high-quality custom banners and event signage from Reliable Banner. We offer the best variety for the most value. So get your totally free estimate today. You can order online at reliablebanner.com or visit our office on the corner of Smoke Ranch and Decatur. Great prices with fast delivery.
Go with Reliable, reliablebanner.com.